of some of the treatment that we're currently using in neuroblastomas in pediatric patients at St. Jude. And just first, because I guess I'm one of the two speakers not from this area, to give you a slight, small background about St. Jude and what our mission is and what we do. To give you a perspective, we're in Memphis, Tennessee. This is the Mississippi River back here. It's Memphis, so we have to have a pyramid. This is the hospital down here. Now, actually, most people are kind of surprised at this. In this big building complex, this building right up here is the clinic. All these three large buildings here are all research facilities. There's about 40 to 50 beds in our clinic right now. And so most of our patients are actually getting treated as outpatient. So only the sickest kids will actually stay inpatient. And some of you might be familiar with like the Ronald McDonald House. We have one of those just off the picture over here where kids will come in, they'll stay there, come in for the day, get their treatment. There's also a Grizzly House, which is in this picture because it hadn't been built when this picture's taken, from the Memphis Grizzlies. Our NBA team gave a couple $1 million to build a short-term stay house, and then there's a Target House, which is off campus also, which is a place where a lot of the kids will stay. It's supported by the Target department stores. Anyway, I'm in this building right here, but again, all the research that goes on in these three buildings supports the various clinical protocols that we have going on in the one building up here. Now, actually, this parking lot is no more. It's a big hole in the ground, which will eventually be a building probably about this size, which will house both research and clinical facilities. So in other words, what goes on there is kind of an interesting mix of clinical research problems, clinical problems, and research problems, from very basic scientific research to very clinical research type problems, and there's this transitional relationship between that, and hopefully I'll point out as we go along how some of that transitional research is and can be used in the treatment. So just a little clinical background of the type of tumor we're talking about, the neuroblastoma. In a recently published study that's just finished maybe a year or so ago on treating neuroblastoma with this drug topotecan, they got about a 60% response rate. If you're not familiar with the response rate, that's what we're referring to as a complete response or a partial response, which is in terms of tumor reduction. So they'll measure the tumor at diagnosis before they give the topotecan, and then they're doing two cycles of the drug, so that ends 40-some days later, because it cycles about every 21 days. And then the median reduction in the tumor volume was about 58% with this range in reductions. And then just the percent reduction, you know, very large percent reductions, what they're referring to as a complete response, a medium range of reductions, a partial response, and if the tumor grew, it would be called progressive disease. What was nice about this study is, A, there was no progressive disease over this period. That is, in all, there was about 28 kids in the study. All cases, the tumor was reduced, some better than others, with an average reduction of about 58%. Now, what's kind of some of the details of what happened in this study is that topotecan was dosed daily for 10 days per cycle, in two cycles, so then they waited 21 days later, they repeated that. And also important is the dose was individualized, similar to what was being talked about in the previous talk. We didn't just give everybody a flat dose, fixed dose. In fact, we basically estimate the topotecan plasma AUC, that stands for area under the curve, so in other words, you measure plasma levels of the drug over a period of time. You fit it to a curve and you do typical integration and get an area under that curve. It's a reasonable measure of drug disposition. And what we wanted to do is try to get that measure between a value of 80 and 100 nanograms per milliliter hours. And it turns out, on average, patient received somewhere around 2.7 milligrams per meter squared, though, of course, that dose was varying depending on the kid. And why is this important? Well, another study done by another group, the PDAC-POG or Pediatric Oncology Group, published about a year ago, only saw about a 39% response rate, defined by the same way, for the same drug and the same pediatric neuroblastoma. But they only dosed daily times 5, so in other words, shorter time interval, and they weren't individualizing doses. Everybody got 2 mg/m². And what I didn't put in the slide, not only is there a lower response rate, as I noted up in this study, we saw no progressive disease over the interval of treatment. Here, I don't remember how many, but there were progressive, there were individuals that had progressive disease over the treatment period. So just a bit more on the dose individualization, because it's kind of important here. And why do we care? Why don't we just, it's much easier. Most clinicians would be happy for you to tell them, here, give them this pill or start this IV at this rate and do it the same for everybody. And that's traditionally how it is done. But it turns out that different patients will get very different amounts of drug and systemically if you just give everybody the same amount. And that's simply because there's a large inter-individual variability. For this drug, for topotecan, it's about a 12-fold range in systemic clearance. What's the systemic clearance is just a measure of how fast the drug is removed from the body. Okay, that's a 12-fold range. So that AUC, that area under the concentration curve, that means is correlated to the systemic clearance. So a higher clearance will give you lower systemic exposure to the drug. Right? You're getting rid of the drug faster. So there's roughly going to be a 12-fold difference in the amount of drug in the body for patients. And as you might guess, if talking about the narrow therapeutic index that was discussed in the previous one, it's narrow. It's certainly not 12-fold range, your therapeutic index. That is how well you will treat the tumor. So part one is the kinetics of the drug. There's a huge amount of variability. In fact, there are studies with topotecan in xenograft mice. If you're not familiar with that, they basically take cells out of a patient and plant them in the mouse to watch how they grow, and then they'll treat that. And of 4 of the 6 types of neuroblastoma cells they implanted in the mice, they achieved complete responses with dosing topotecan so that its AUC was around 88 nanograms per milliliter hours. So in the mice, 2/3 of the different tumors they tried, this was a successful dose at significantly reducing the tumor volume. And if you remember in the previous slide, I said we're trying to target a range from 80 to 120. So we're trying to get the amount of drug in the system somewhere close to what we saw in the xenograft mice. Now, of course, just because it works in mice doesn't guarantee it's going to work in the humans, but it's the best we have right now. Now, to look at another study in a completely different cancer, refractory acute leukemia, meaning that it's returned, it's not the initial treatment of it, it's recurrent. We also have used topotecan in treating that group of patients. And this, I bring this up for one interesting point, that in that group, we got 6 of 18 complete or partial responses in patients treated with anywhere from 1.4 to 2.4 milligrams per meter squared over 12 days, as opposed to if you treated them over a shorter treatment period, anywhere from 5 to 9 days, we only got 2 of 31 complete or partial responses. And notice the range of doses used was higher. So we gave more dose, but over a shorter period, we saw a lot fewer complete or partial responses. So it's kind of telling, and I should note in the two complete or partial responses in this group, one of them was for the longer period, the 9 days, and the other one was for 5 days. So from the previous study, we're looking at, well, dose definitely is important in seeing a response. And in that one also, we had the difference between a 10 and a 5 day treatment window. In fact, here, the difference between a 5 to 9 to 12 day treatment window, we see that looks to be very important in the response we see to the various tumors treated with topotecan. Now, as was pointed out in the last talk also, if we didn't have toxicities, we'd just give tons of drug and patient would be cured, but that's unfortunately not true. In the same neuroblastoma study, every one of the patients, I think there's 28 patients in that study, every one of them received grade 4 neutropenia. And the median length of it was around 15 days. What do I mean by that? So this is just one set of data from one of the patients there. We got time along and days along the x-axis and normalized ANC, which is an absolute neutrophil count. It's a measure of the neutrophils, normalized to time zero being to one, just for simplicity. And you'll see in the little orange box shows the interval where the topotecan's being given. And I haven't mentioned it yet, but once after the topotecan's done, to try to help the recovery of the neutrophils, they give a growth factor called GCSF, which helps the recovery of neutrophils, basically stimulates their growth after the topotecan's done. And you'll see that, so you give the topotecan, you get a crash. These values are extremely low. They're near zero. So average humans got anywhere from an ANC of around 2,000. Note this is normalized, so one is around 2,500, I think, if I remember correctly, for this individual. So the average human being somewhere around 2,000 plus or minus a little bit. If you drop below 1,000, your physician's going to start to get worried, your ANC. If you drop below 500, that's where we get into the grade 4 neutropenia case. You're highly susceptible to infection. These values down here are probably below 10 on average. And the length of period from roughly from here to here is on average around 15 days. So that means these kids are being myelosuppressed for around 15 days. And during that period of time, they have to be watched very carefully to make sure that there aren't any infections. Other toxicities due to the topotecan treatment in these cases, all but one patient got thrombocytopenia grade 4, which is related to depression of platelets. And many of them got platelet transfusions over this time to help in that. And not as many, but still a number after 6 of the 56 cycles, each patient got 2 cycles, they received grade 4 diarrhea, which again is related to the effects of the drug in the GI tract and so on and causing the diarrhea. So you can see there are some very significant toxicities that we want to account for. So all this really shows that, A, that the dose and the schedule are clinically relevant factors. In other words, I'm not going to just make up some type of mathematical formulation that turns out to not really be effective clinically. All the 2 clinical studies that I put up there all point to the fact that the dose you give and the schedule which you give that dose are important. And from the last slide, we also have to account the toxicity, because we can't just keep a patient myelosuppressed for extended periods of time, otherwise they'll get an infection and that will cause more problems than the cancer's causing. So we have to look a little bit more closely at what topotecan is doing. It's what's called a topoisomerase 1 inhibitor, and not to get into any of the details of that, except it's effective against the DNA, meaning that it's a cell cycle specific drug. That is, it's going to be active in tumor and other cells that are actively proliferating. And what's interesting is there's several mathematical models that have looked at cell cycle specific treatment, and they have suggested that longer treatment schedules are more efficacious, which is essentially what the clinical studies that I was just showing were also showing. But the downside is they're also more myelosuppressive. That is, you give the same amount of drug, but you give it over a longer period of time, a drug such as topotecan, it's going to be more myelosuppressive, but it's also going to be better at reducing the volume of the tumor. So it begs the question of, what's the optimal dosage and schedule? So kind of to put it in one slide, what the main modeling aim of this would be is I'd like to develop, and this is very general terminology here, but I'd like to develop an optimal treatment in terms of the topotecan and or GCSF dose and schedule. Again, remember the GCSF is the stimulating factor which will help the recovery of the neutrophils. So in other words, do I need to give that at all? Do I want to give a lot? If I give too much of it, there's toxicities related to the GCSF. You can't just give huge amounts of that, just like you can't give huge amounts of topotecan without seeing toxic side effects. And the 2 main goals that I'd like to do when I develop any optimization model I develop is I want to maximize efficacy. How am I going to define that? There's a bunch of different ways. In fact, if you look in the literature, the modeling literature, various authors have tried all kinds of different ways that how to define efficacy. We're just going to be very simple in here. We're going to define it as the reduction in the tumor volume over a predefined interval, mostly because that's the kind of data I have. I know the tumor volume pre-treatment. I know the tumor volume post-treatment. I'd like to minimize the tumor volume post-treatment. It might not be the best way to define it, but it's the way to it's the method that I have data on, and that's what's driving what I can model and what I can't. We need to effectively manage toxicities. Notice I don't say minimize toxicities, right? I want to effectively manage them, meaning that I don't want the patient to have some infection and die because of that, as opposed to, you know, because I gave too much drug. But I know they're going to have toxicities, and there are some acceptable toxicities as long as we manage them well. And there's a lot of ways we can define that. We could define a minimum acceptable level of ANC. So in other words, you could say we don't want the neutrophils to get below a specific level. We could say that we don't want the, we could say they go as low as they want, but we don't want the length of time they're that low to be beyond a certain point. In the study I was just showing you, that was on average, the patients who were depressed had their neutrophils, the ANC count was down for roughly 2 weeks, 14 to 15 days. And or you might want to put in there some maximum exposure of the drug, which is kind of a more general measure of the toxicity, not specific to, say, neutrophils. We just don't want to give more than such a so much drug because, for example, we know that might cause excessive diarrhea in this particular case. And then we got to define how we want to, what kind of treatment function we want to optimize. In a very general mathematical sense, we could have some bizarre function like this, where this is the amount of dose you give over time, and you know we start off with a higher dose, but due to toxicity we have to drop down, then we're able to give a little bit more. The only problem with that is try to find a clinician who can actually give a treatment that follows that dosage pattern. More likely what you're going to give is something like this. So for the first 2 days we're going to give the patient dose A, then we're going to drop it down to dose B over the next 2 days, and the next day we're going to, in other words, it's going to more likely be we're going to give a particular dose on each day, and in fact, this is probably even a little over-optimistic of what could be done, but at least there we're suggesting what, you know, kind of a piecewise what can happen each day as opposed to some continuous function of the dosing. There are a variety of functions, mathematical functions that have in the literature that objective functionals that we're actually trying to optimize. I just put a few up here, kind of what I would call the more traditional optimal control forms. For example, I'll just maybe look at the second one. And this one we're trying to, we're in is the tumor volume. So we're trying to minimize the tumor volume at big T is the end time, whatever that is in our study. That's going to be after the second cycle of topotecan, so roughly 40-some days later. So we want to minimize the tumor volume at the end time. And we also want to, U again is the dose function, and so this is essentially the area under the concentration curve, the AUC, right, the integral of the dose function. So we're basically minimizing, in this function, you're minimizing the amount of drug you give to also minimize the volume of the tumor at the end, at whatever we predefined end time. Now that's nice, except for the fact that I want to be a bit more specific on the toxicity. I don't want to just minimize the amount of drug given. I know something about the ANC, the neutrophil counts, and so I want to maybe also look at a constrained optimization problem where, for example, we want to just minimize the volume of the tumor at the end time, but we have instead some specific constraints. For example, we want to keep the length of the ANC less than some maximum length, or we want to keep the actual level of the ANC above some minimum, or this one would be kind of related to this here, that is the AUC, the area under the concentration curve, has got to be less than some max. You can kind of come up with a whole bunch of variety of different constraints for your problem. Well, to be able to do this modeling, we need a model. I haven't showed you any models yet. We need a model of the tumor growth so that we can model efficacy, and we also need a model of the neutrophil dynamics. So first I'll look at a tumor efficacy model. That is, we need something about the tumor growth, and I'm going to just use a pretty straightforward model where we're going to account for divided into actively cycling cells, tumor cells. So those are going to be the ones that are going to be sensitive to our topotecan treatment, or in general, you could generalize this to any model that is, any drug that is active against DNA or drugs such as that, such as topotecan, and then the quiescent or resting cells, which are going to be resistant to the drug. They're not actively cycling, so the drug won't actively kill those. And then there's some growth rate, and then there's some effect of the drug only on the cycling cells. And so we got that model. We need to be able to parameterize it in some way. And it's not trivial to do that. So over here, we're pointing out the only data we have on this neuroblastoma, and this is the study I was just talking about earlier, is the diagnostic tumor volume and the after topotecan tumor volume. So that's, again, after two cycles of the drug. So we essentially know nothing from this about the rate of growth of that drug, of a neuroblastoma. All we have is 2 points, and you know, each one is a different patient. So a patient like this got a pretty significant reduction in the tumor volume. Patients like this, a pretty much stable disease over the period, and so on. So we have to look at somewhere else to try to get an idea, and it's not perfect, but we go back to the xenografts in mice. That is, we took, the human neuroblastoma xenografts and looked at their doubling times, and they range in our studies from anywhere from almost 5 days to 18 days. Now, again, there's no guarantee that the growth rate in a xenograft is equal to the growth rate in the human, but it's the best we have for right now. So based on that, and we can get an idea of estimating a parameter for growth rate in the problem, based on this data, the reduction over the 2 cycles of treatment, we can get an idea of a parameter describing the drug effect. So we can reasonably parameterize our tumor efficacy model related to not perfect data, but the only data we have on these neuroblastoma patients. And next, we need to look at the model of the myelosuppression. And so that's actually the bottom part. So that we need to kind of consider the bone marrow. So this much of the model describes the neutrophils in the bone marrow. So there's some stem cell population that's actively proliferating. And then those cells differentiate into various forms, which eventually go out into the as circulating neutrophils. This is what we can measure over here. You watch ER and they say, oh, get the CBCs on the patient. Well, one of the things in the CBCs is an ANC, the absolute neutrophil count. In fact, as you saw from the graph earlier, we have almost daily levels of that. So we got gobs of data of what's going on over here. We don't have any data here, so we kind of have to interpolate what's going on here. Then these kids get G-CSF after treatment to help out the recovery. What does the G-CSF do? It stimulates the stem cell production, and it stimulates differentiation, so it helps the cells move faster through the bone marrow to the circulation. And this is just the part describing the drug concentration and its effect on the stems, only on the stem cells. The topotecan doesn't affect directly, only indirectly, the circulating neutrophils. So given that model and the data from this study, this top graph is time, drug concentration, little green curves is basically showing you what the 5 doses, and again, we don't like to work on weekends, so we take 2 days off and then give 5 more doses, so that's the 10 doses that we gave, and then 21 days later, repeat the cycle. This is just the schematic showing the neutrophils. The little boxes are actually the median neutrophil level, ANC, at any particular day. The blue curve is my model fit using the median parameters from the 27 patients we described, and the little brown curves are looking at the 20th and 80th percentile of the data. So you can kind of see the model describes the data reasonably well. So we have a model describing the tumor growth and efficacy treatment. We have a model describing the toxicity. Well, one of the toxicities, I notice I'm only talking about the neutrophils. I also mentioned there's thrombocytopenia and diarrhea that's also relevant here. To keep it simple, and being that I have direct data on the neutrophils, we'll only consider that. What I want to do is I want to minimize the tumor volume with respect to the drug treatment and also account for the G-CSF to help in the recovery of the toxicity. And I want to minimize it with respect to the end of the second cycle. Now, I could also modify that to look at, it's got to be minimized somewhere between time zero in the end of the second cycle, but for right now, I'll just consider this first one. I'm going to use piecewise continuous dosing. That is, right now you can say, okay, we're going to either dose on a day, and then you pick the level that we want to dose, but you can't vary that from day, you can't vary that within the day because it just clinically wouldn't be practical. And in fact, the dosing schemes you saw there where you give them the same dose for 5 days, you rest 2 days, you give them the same dose again for 5 days. And we could get more sophisticated than that, but that's what we're going to do right now. And the constraints that we're going to put on the problem relative to toxicity is we want to keep the length of the neutrophil suppression, i.e. less than 500 in non-normalized terms, to be less than some specific time, maybe 2 weeks, maybe only 1 week. And that's what I would call my specific constraint, specific to neutrophils. And now I have some kind of more general constraints I could put on the problem. That is, I don't want to give more than a specific amount of the drug, or I don't want to give more of the topotecan, or I don't want to give more than a specific amount of the GCSF, what I'd refer to as my generalized constraints. And this is kind of some preliminary research, so I haven't gotten down to doing all the optimization. What I'd like to show you for the last couple of slides is just a few specific simulations of what happens as you vary different components of the treatment, and then, of course, you could put this into a computer and say, optimize, figure out what's the best dose scheme, dosage and schedule scheme based on the model I have. And so this slide, we're basically looking at the current dosing scheme. That is, we give the topotecan at around 2 milligrams per meter squared per day, daily times 5 times 2. So in other words, they're going to get 5 doses, then 5 more, and then the second cycle they're going to get, again, a total of 10 doses. So this graph over here is describing the pharmacokinetics, that is, how much drug is in your system over time. And then they're going to get the GCSF recovery after the end of it, so it's going from basically day 12 to 20. So in this interval, when they're not getting the topotecan, they're getting the GCSF. And I'm going to estimate, I need to estimate my parameter for cell kill. I'm going to use the data I showed you on the earlier slide on the tumor reduction. And basically right now, just for simplicity, I'm going to say I want to estimate the cell kill parameter based on the median data, that is the 58% reduction. And so here is the tumor volume at time zero. For the average patient, it was around a 300 or so milliliter tumor volume. Then you get the various treatments, and by the end of the second cycle, it's reduced. That reduction is about 58% from here to here. Keep in mind I'm on a log scale here. And then this graph over here is showing the simulation of what's going on with your neutrophils. And it's showing that the length of the depression is around, in this simulation, based on median parameters from the 28 patients in our neuroblastoma study, is around 14 days for each cycle. So that's kind of the baseline problem right now, given the reasonably successful clinical trial we have. And so one question you might say is, was the GCSF actually necessary? That is, the drug that helped in the recovery of the neutrophils. So I'm going to simulate, you know, given the model and the parameters I estimated in the previous slide, I'm going to simulate what's going on without GCSF. Well, it turns out, if I don't reduce the dose, I would have stayed myelosuppressed a lot longer. I had to cut the dose in half from, if you remember in the previous slide, it was 2 down to 1 milligram per meter squared. And if I do that, I keep my constraint on the A and C reasonable, now around 15 days, but I only get about a 38% reduction in the tumor. So giving the drug that helped in the toxicity recovery, the GCSF, allowed us to give more drug, which allowed more of a reduction in the tumor volume than if you didn't give it. And secondly, to relate to the schedule, remember at the very beginning I said we had one study where you gave it over 5 days and we saw a much less, a smaller response to the tumor. Well, how does the model play out with that? So here we're going to give, before it was 2 milligrams per meter squared per day, daily times 5 times 2. So we're going to give twice the drug, but only half the only 5 times as opposed to 10 times. So the total amount of drug we're giving in the simulation is the same. We're just giving it over a shorter period of time, right? So now they're getting daily times 5, but if you these peaks are much higher here, you get a lot less myelosuppression, only about half the length here, so the toxicity is not near as bad, but we get progressive disease. And in fact, again, in the study where they only gave it every 5 days, they did see progressive disease in a reasonable number of the patients. So what we could do, well, if we're optimizing this, we might say, well, we could actually give the drug more often, maybe, because much less toxicity. We can say we're perfectly acceptable with 7 days of suppression. Maybe we can go up to 14. One thing you could try is just increase the dose. So let's say, well, I don't want to give 4 over 5 days. I want to give 8 mg/m² over 5 days. Well, I don't show a graph for that, but essentially it's almost the same. It doesn't really improve the treatment. And the reason for that is because of the cell cycle specific nature of this drug. The drug is killing off all the actively cycling cells, and you got to have some time for the resting cells to get actively cycling for the next dose to be effective against it. And that's kind of what's important here. And so I think I'm more than out of time, so I'll just make a few conclusions and from what I've talked about. So we've got some preliminary modeling and simulation results which do relate to what we see clinically, which is, of course, the most important factor. I don't want to develop a model that has no relationship to the clinical results that we have. The nice thing about a model, the current model, and pretty much most models you define, is can allow for comparison of treatment strategies in silico on the computer. So kind of what I was doing in the last few pictures, I was saying, well, what happens if I change the schedule of dosing, or if I double the dose, what happens? And we can kind of play around with all that and kind of give ourselves a good idea of what might happen clinically. Doesn't guarantee it will be effective or ineffective clinically, but it gives us a good idea. And then, of course, what the idea is, I'll take the modeling that we've got here and apply optimal control techniques to it so that I'm not just guessing myself, oh, we're going to cut the schedule in half or double the dose or this and that, but put that into an optimal control problem that will automate it on the computer, and then it'll figure out based on whatever assumptions I put into the model, and again, that's kind of the important part, based on the model assumptions, it'll determine the best treatment. And to kind of conclude on that, and this was mentioned a bit in the previous talk, one of those model assumptions that I'm making here, and it is commonly made, is known as the Skipper's log kill model hypothesis, which is, again, talked in the last talk a little bit about. But some people would argue that that might not necessarily be the most appropriate model for describing the cell kill. Others, including, would go for this what's called the Norton-Simon hypothesis that would say that the cell kill is proportional to the growth rate. So if you take a tumor that's a large tumor that is not growing very actively, then it would suggest that the drug would not be very effective against it. But if you take a smaller, actively growing tumor, then the drug would be very effective against it. So you might consider, or we might consider, looking at various cell kill hypotheses and how those would change or differ the modeling and the results of the modeling. Thank you.